that while man looks at physical appearance, God looks at the heart. There was something about the heart of David that God loved. And I have to tell you, there's something about the heart of David I love. I was thinking about all these stories. Terry was like, do you know any of the stories about David? There's a lot of them. I think of how much faith David had in God when, just as a young boy, he was willing to go up against that giant Philistine Goliath and slay him with just that smooth rock and that sling in his hand. I was thinking, wow. You know, and that story inspires me because we all have Goliaths in our life, don't we? We all have those things that intimidate us, that scare us, those forces that we have to go up against at some point in our life. And to have the kind of faith that David had, to be able to go up against those, letting God work through us in those moments is an amazing thing. I think of stories like David and Jonathan. I don't think a deeper, more meaningful spiritual friendship is reflected anywhere else in all of literature that outdoes the relationship that David had with Jonathan. It said that Jonathan loved David more than he loved his own life. And I think, wow, I would like friendships like that. I would love to be able to love someone beyond myself more than my own life. I want to love like David loves. I think of David at that time in his life where he was discouraged, when he was confounded, when he wondered maybe if God had abandoned him altogether. And he went into the cave of Adullam. And I think, you know, there are times in which we all find ourselves in a dark, dank, cold cave, wondering and just so discouraged and wondering where God is. And yet in this story with David, we see that God does this amazing work on David in that cave, which shows us that God does amazing things in caves, because it's in caves that God even brings dead stuff back to life. I think about the story that we've got today. David dancing and rejoicing as the ark is brought back into Jerusalem and the people can worship God in God's very presence, and how he's just worshiping God with reckless abandon. I love that. And sometimes I wish I could worship like that, not care what other people think, right? And just worship God. I mean, for David, it doesn't get any higher than that. Then I think about the fallenness of David. And I think about his murdering Uriah and the adultery with Bathsheba. I think of the spiritual hypocrisy that he lived in for over a year. And my heart breaks for David. And I think, you know, we're all vulnerable, aren't we? We're all vulnerable to that kind of thing. And I think to myself, wow, does it get any lower than that for David? I think of the compassion that David had on a nobody. You remember the story of Mephibosheth? Here's this young, crippled boy who's living in fear, thinking that the new king is going to come and kill him because he's a descendant of Saul, the old king. And he lives in fear, and he's crippled, and he's just thinking of himself as a nobody, and he's asked to come and see the new king, David. And you could just imagine the fear that he has. Because what is a new king going to go and do to the descendants of the old king? But David says, I've called you here to show kindness upon you, to love you and share compassion with you. I want you to eat at my table. I want to treat you as one of my own sons. I'm going to restore to you all the lands that were taken away from you, all the lands that were Saul's. I'm going to give that back to you so you have an income stream. And he says, who am I? I'm a nobody. I'm a dead dog to you, David. I'm a nobody. And David says, I won't hear you talk like that anymore. You are a son in this house. And I think, to show love and compassion to those who are vulnerable around us, those who feel like nobodies, those who feel rejected by our society and by others, to see them. And not just see them, but to invite them and to care for them and to show kindness and compassion to them. Wow. I think of the story of David's son Absalom, who's so upset with his father, so upset that well, he tried a coup d'etat, tried to take over the kingdom from his father, kicked his father out, and did all kinds of things to embarrass his father, this treasonous son, and how his father, who loved his son, said, spare his life. He's done an awful thing here, but spare his life. His life is not spared. And David comes back to the city gate, now that the city has been recaptured, looks upon the city and cries aloud, oh, Absalom, my son, my son, my son. Because you see, with David, when David loves someone, they say loved. And he was able to love even those who are most sinful, even those who are most treasonous. He loved someone and they stayed loved. He demonstrated grace and forgiveness to people. And maybe that's part of the reason that he's called a man after God's own heart. Because he was able to love those who even hated him. You know, David was an amazing person. He lived with this wild abandon. He lived in deep reflection. If you read the Psalms, deep reflection. He lived with grace and forgiveness. He was an amazing person. He started as a shepherd boy and became a king. Started as a fugitive and became a conqueror. And I think, you know, if we study the life of David, there's a lot here for us to study and to apply to our own lives. But I want to look at just one thing today, and that is this. I want to look at the connection that the Bible makes between the name of David and that of Jesus. Because have you ever noticed this? That there's a connection between the two. We're told when Joseph and Mary, remember at Christmas time, when Joseph and Mary were going to have their child Jesus, they go to Bethlehem because why? They're of the line and lineage of David. The very first verse that we read in the whole New Testament, Matthew, right? The first book of the New Testament, first verse is this. A record of the genealogy of Jesus Christ, the son of David. Wow. The last verse that we read in the New Testament, the last book of Revelation, we read this. I, Jesus, have sent my angel to give you this testimony for the churches. I am the root and the offspring of David, the bright morning star. Now I want to ask you a question. Why was Jesus referred to as the son of David? He could have been referred to as the son of Moses. Moses was the great deliverer, right? The person who led people out of captivity into freedom. Why isn't Jesus called the son of Moses? Or the son of Elijah, that great prophet. You remember the big showdown on Mount Elijah, on Mount Carmel? Why isn't he called the son of Elijah? Or the son of Isaiah, the great prophet? He's called the son of David. Why? Is it because of David's moral purity? That somehow Jesus, who's morally pure, is like David in his moral purity? I don't think so. Because if you look at other characters in the Old Testament, there are those who are more morally pure than David. Joseph, for example. Is it because of his courage, his character? Is it something about that? I don't think so. I think rather, it's what God was up to both in the life of David and in the life of Jesus. That there's something about the life of David that reflects the mission and identity that we see in Jesus. And I think there are two things that I'm going to point out this morning that we see in David's life that have to do with the mission and identity of Jesus. The first is this, that when thinking about Jesus as the son of David, that title, the son of David, was a title of hope. A title of hope. Do you know that David was the king over not simply a golden era within Israel's history, but the golden era within Israel's history? The first king, Saul, was really a mess. If you know the story, I mean, there's a lot of messy stuff in the life of Saul. He was a wreck, and he really left the kingdom in shambles at the end of his life. David becomes king. And what does David bring? Well, he brings unity within the country, freedom from their enemies, prosperity within the country, and a deep devotion to God. This is what he brings. After his reign, we have his son Solomon as king. And Solomon begins great, but ends really poorly. So poorly, in fact, I mean, most of the good part of Solomon's reign is on the heels of David, really on the coattails of David. And he ends so poorly that the kingdom is divided. If you know your story, your history of Israel, you'll know the divided kingdom. And this lasted for quite some time. And this was a very difficult time. And finally, it gave way to exile and depression. There was only one era in Israel's entire history that had unity, freedom, prosperity, and devotion. And it was under David. It was the golden era. And I was trying to think of, is there any other time in which there has been one time in history that was so great and people have longed for it ever since? I wasn't here back, was it 1979 that a little group called the Sonics won the national championship? It was a long time ago. Some of you can remember that. And ever since that time, it's been Ichabod. You know what Ichabod means in the Bible? The glory has departed. Because when the Sonics left, the glory departed with them. And people have been yearning for the return of an NBA team, or yearning for the Sonics to come back so that we can have that glory all over again. Now that is in a very, very small way a little bit of what's going on with Israel, because Israel had this little time in which they were just victorious, this time in which they just had everything working right, and they longed for it. They wanted it again, but they had just been pawns ever since then, pawned about by the Assyrians, and then the Babylonians, and then you've got the Greeks, and then you've got the Romans, just pawned about, never to have that kind of freedom again, but they longed for it. They longed for a son of David to restore the throne, somebody from a root of Jesse, somebody to come through that line and lineage, who could come as David was anointed to be the new anointed one. Anointed one. That's what the word Messiah means. Anointed one. A new Christ. The word in Greek, Christos, means anointed one. And then Jesus comes along one day, and people begin to see in him anointing. They begin to see him as one who might restore that throne. And it's interesting. Every time in the New Testament when you see Jesus called the Son of David, it's interesting to see what's going on in that story. Because every time it is a group of people or an individual who is feeling helpless, as if they've lost all hope, but are now calling out to Jesus to restore their hope. Let me give you some examples. In Matthew 9, it says, as Jesus went on from there, two blind men followed him, calling out, have mercy on us, Son of David. Two blind men, helpless and hopeless, seeing something in Jesus in their heart that would give them hope. In Matthew 15, a Canaanite woman, not even an Israelite, a Canaanite woman, from that vicinity came to him crying out, Lord, Son of David, have mercy on me. My daughter is suffering terribly from demon possession. Here's a mother, hopeless because of what's going on with her poor daughter, who's reaching out to Jesus as the Son of David. You've got a whole crowd of people in Jerusalem upset with what the Romans are doing, wanting somebody to come and liberate them from this oppression. And here comes Jesus, that triumphal entry, coming in to restore the kingdom of David, we're told. But my favorite story is this. It's the story of Bartimaeus. You know the story. When Bartimaeus heard that it was Jesus of Nazareth, he began to shout, Jesus, Son of David, have mercy on me. Many rebuked him and told him to be quiet, but he shouted all the more, Son of David, have mercy on me. Bartimaeus was crying out for help. Jesus loves it when people cry out to him for help, because Jesus came to restore hope. He comes to those who are hopeless and wants people to cry out to him. So let me ask you this morning, if you were to cry out right now to Jesus, the Son of David, the restorer of hope, what would you be crying out for? Would you be crying out for healing? Maybe healing of some sickness or healing in your heart? Maybe healing of a relationship? Would you want him to restore wholeness and well-being and healing to you if he were to walk this way? Maybe you'd be crying out for peace. Maybe you're feeling anxious, right? Maybe there's something going on in your life that's causing you some despair, some darkness, and you just want peace to be restored. Maybe you're crying out for joy. Maybe you just want joy in your heart, and you can't find joy, and you want the Son of David to restore you, filling you with joy. Well, Jesus is the Son of David, and he is the restorer of hope. That's part of what this title means, is he's the one who brings hope. But there's one other thing that this title means, and that is this. That when Jesus comes as the Son of David, he's also one who's entering into our humanity. See, Jesus doesn't come and isn't a part of a line and lineage that's pure, that's undefiled, but rather he intentionally enters into this world in the messiness and the sin and the shame of a broken family. All in order to say that I'm willing to go into any darkness, any sinful situation, to partner with you in dealing with that so that I might be glorified and it might go well with you. And all God calls us to do is what David ended up doing, which was unlike most other kings in Israel's history. And that is to bend your knee and say, yes, Lord. Yes, Lord. See, the thing is, if you trace back David's genealogy, and there are several places in which, in the Bible, we see David's genealogy, what you're going to see there is not a pure, we're not just talking about David and his adultery and his murderous and his hypocrisy. We're not just talking about that. We're talking about others who are still part of his family. We have pagans and adulterers and murderers and all kinds of brokenness going on within his family. I mean, this is prostitutes and everything else. And it's almost as if Jesus is coming to us to communicate this one thing to us, and that is this: no matter who you are, no matter where you've been from, no matter what you've done, don't think that I can't enter into your life or that of your family. There is nothing too sinful or too shameful for me to enter into. If I can enter into the life of David, I can enter into your life as well. Well, you know, I was thinking, if at the end of my life, someone were to say to me, and I just did a funeral for a pastor a couple weeks ago, I'd never done that before, that was different, and somebody will someday do my funeral, and I was thinking, if on that day someone says about me something that's similar to that of David, that when he loved people, they stayed loved, that he was able to live with a little bit of reckless abandonment, that he had a deep devotion to God, that he loved those people who were a bit on the fringes, people who thought themselves as nothing but dogs, but he was able to bring them into his embrace and love them, that God did a good work in his life. If someone were able to say that about me, that I had a heart that was like a man after God's own heart, sort of like David, I think that no matter whatever else I was able to accomplish in this life or not accomplish, that I would have been considered successful. And I think about this community, because the thing that David loved most was God. He loved God most. And as God looks at this community, I hope God is able to say about this community, this is a community that, like David, was able to love people in a committed way, that reached out to the vulnerable, that cared for the lost, that had the courage to be able to face down even the Goliaths, that was there to love those even when others hurt them. If God is able to say that about us, I think we as a community will be successful. We should yearn to be people after God's own heart. But I think the way that we become people after God's own heart is best done when we open our hearts to the one who is the Son of David. Because when the Son of David makes your heart his home, then truly you are a person after God's own heart. To God be the glory. Amen.